Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. For many kids in Philadelphia, a trip to the corner library might mean finding a plastic tarp over some of the books because the roof leaks, or the facility is chilly because the heating doesn't work. The local rec center might not look much better, with puddles on the floor perhaps, or drafty windows, or a basketball court which has been vandalized. It's been decades since many libraries, recreation centers, and playgrounds have seen a fresh coat of paint or structural repair, and Mayor Kenney's Rebuild program seeks to address this by dedicating hundreds of millions of dollars over a period of about 6 years to bring these public spaces back to life. Rebuild is an ambitious plan which also aims to restore communities and stimulate employment, and it recently received an enormous vote of confidence in the form of a $100 million grant from the William Penn Foundation, the foundation's largest grant ever. Quite a start, but there's more to be done. And here to help tell the story, Nicole Westerman is Executive Director of Rebuild. Welcome to Radio Times, Nicole.
Good morning, Mary.
Janet Haas is Chair of the Board of the William Penn Foundation. Good to have you with us, Janet.
Thank you.
And this note, WHYY does receive funding from the William Penn Foundation. And Mike DeBaradinas is Managing Director for the City of Philadelphia. Welcome back, Mike.
Good morning. Thank you.
Sure. So, how would you characterize the conditions that exist in some of these public spaces around the city? Tell us what you've seen, Mike.
Yeah, well, I've been involved in the system almost continuously since 1992. And under Mayor Nutter, I also had responsibility not only for Park and Rec, but for the libraries as well. So I have a pretty good working knowledge of the system. And they're wonderful, big and beautiful, but for a very long time, they've been these facilities. So, for instance, 48 neighborhood libraries, 4 regional libraries, 150 recreation centers, 55 gymnasiums, 70 swimming pools, hundreds of ball fields, yeah, hundreds of play areas, 5 ice skating rinks.
There's
go
a lot.
On and on. They've been undercapitalized, and it makes some sense, to given all the demands on the city's capital budget over 20, 30 years. So they've been underinvested. And as a result, the facilities are in need of major reinvestment to lift them up and to really transform them into high quality, valued, and highly utilized facilities across the city.
Yeah.
For example, when you look at some of these older buildings, some of the bigger, older facilities, they're like 100 years old and have never had a major systematic renovation.
It is time.
It's time, right? That's the point. Yeah. We're ready.
So, Janet, I understand, at least from reading published reports, that you went out into the field to do some research. What hit home for you?
Oh, I regularly go around Philadelphia and try to see the facilities that we have. This summer, in particular, I visited a number of libraries, and it's much as you said, tarps covering books. But in fact, 10 of the libraries out of 53 were closed, and the reason for that is there was no air conditioning. So not where they were not too cold, they were impossible actually to do any work in. Rec centers, many in our city were built really essentially as bunkers. They're drab, dreary, they're in disrepair. Windows are either broken or really not at all transparent. Some of them have just one outlet and one light fixture. There's broken concrete. There's other bathroom fixtures and so forth that don't work. There are buckets on the floor, even though it hasn't been raining lately. And this is despite the fact that our city departments do their very best to keep up with these facilities. The point is that duct tape for decades just doesn't do the trick.
Yeah.
You need more than that. And one of the things that I've been most struck with is the volunteers. Almost each of our facilities has really remarkable volunteers from the community who stay at it day after day, week after week, year after year, without having facilities that are conducive to the kind of programming and the kind of skills that they can teach others and offer.
So, Nicole, thus Rebuild. What are the immediate effects on neighborhood residents then, children in particular, of what we've been describing?
So what we're really excited about Rebuild is that it's not just about capital improvements to these facilities. Of course, we're expecting to come out with facilities that are safe, that are operational, where the air conditioning is working, where the janitors don't have to follow kids on the basketball court with a mop when it's raining. But we're expecting to end up with facilities that that are inspiring and where these communities are better able to come together and develop the programming that their communities need to be successful. So the point is not the bricks and mortar, but it's that these facilities are places where there's programming that's improving their lives, where they're coming, where a cross-section of the community is coming together and interacting, youth, older people, people of lots of different income levels. And what's especially exciting about Rebuild is that that we can engage a large cross-section of Philadelphians through the process of improving these facilities. We can help develop the capacity of Friends of groups, recreation advisory councils, and at the same time, we can provide more economic opportunities through jobs, through through construction job opportunities, and by providing opportunities for small businesses in Philadelphia.
We're going to get to a lot of, there are a lot of facets to Rebuild, and we're going to try to get to everything throughout the hour. And I do want to give the number out to 888-477-9499 if you'd like to join the conversation. You can send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org or a tweet at @WHYYRadioTimes. So, Mike, how many facilities are we talking about approximately across the city?
Well, over 400 is the total number, slightly over 400. We don't suspect we will be able to invest in everyone, but we do believe we will invest in a significant number, well more than half, probably 75% of the facilities, I think, across the system. We are blessed to have William Penn's support, as well as are anticipating we will be able to leverage these funds not only locally but regionally and nationally with other foundations, as well as state and federal funding. So none of that's certain, but if our history proves right, this investment will leverage significant dollars across the board.
And again, we're talking total how much?
Well, approximately? I think it's fair to say at a minimum $500 million over the 6 years.
Okay. Let's get to that grant. So Janet Haas, $100 million, the largest grant that the William Penn Foundation has ever awarded.
True, by far.
So what went into the process? How did you, the board, come to this particular amount?
Well, of course, we thought about it carefully, but we also recognize that it's a once-in-a-generation opportunity, that this is an unprecedented opportunity for a transformative impact on the entire city. This aligns very well with our interests to ensure that all residents have access to high-quality public spaces and to civic amenities. You heard as Nicole was speaking that these places are essential. Residents rely on them every day to grow, to learn, exercise, collaborate, to live healthy lifestyles. These are neighborhood anchors. And they cross our three funding areas at William Penn Foundation, which are sustainable natural resources, high-quality education for disadvantaged children and youth starting at age zero in our city, and to develop accessible, vibrant public spaces.
So I was reading that, you know, it still wasn't perhaps necessarily a very quick conversation, I imagine, among board members. And in published reports, you know, you described yourself as a bit of a skeptic during the process. So really, what went through your mind as you were considering this?
I think my own skepticism is more characteristic of me than maybe the grant and this effort, but because I've been told that before. But we wanted to make sure a number of things. We wanted to be sure that it was smart, that it would be driven by data about the condition of the more than 400 centers, as Mike was mentioning, but also about the socioeconomic neighborhood factors, the levels of poverty in the neighborhood's health. You know, diabetes and asthma are particular indicators of low income and of unhealthy environments. We were looking at drug offenses. The program has also looked at household growth, market value, whether or not there are new permits for residences in a current neighborhood. So we wanted to have lots of data so that when these investments would be made, they'd be made smartly and in the areas of greatest need.
So Janet, what at the end of the day, what pushed the foundation across the finish line in deciding to say yes?
I think the fact that this work is propelled by the values of equity, community engagement, and economic opportunity, and they're fundamental to the work we've done and fundamentally important to this city's prosperity.
All right. So Nicole, much of Rebuild's investment is going to go to struggling neighborhoods. How many? We did talk about, over 400 sites, as Mike said. Have you settled on certain areas yet?
So, as Janet explained, we've used data to understand neighborhoods and where is there the most distress. Unfortunately, as I think we all know, there's distress across a lot of areas of Philadelphia. So you know, the bad news for Philadelphia is that there's a lot of distress. The good news for Rebuild is that means that we plan to invest all over the city. We would like to invest 2/3 to 3/4 of these construction dollars into these distressed neighborhoods. We also want to invest in neighborhoods that that are in transition, where these investments can help to catalyze private investment or help to stabilize the neighborhood as well. So we believe that there's opportunity to invest in so many different neighborhoods across the city, and it's really part of Mayor Kenney's promise. You know, every neighborhood counts. You know, we've seen these amazing facilities in Center City now. We have Dilworth Park and Sister Cities Park. And, you know, kids in every neighborhood of Philadelphia should be able to walk to an amazing, beautiful park.
So we're building out from Center City now.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. Yeah, and there's been investments both in Center City and around in neighborhoods across the city that have proven it's like a proof of concept. So we invested with the Conservancy and the Foundation and the Phillies and the Eagles at Hunting Park. It's a regional park in North Philly right near the Boulevard. The crime rate went down, probably 70 or 80% over the course of the first couple of years of the investment.
That much of a change.
And organized programs went through the roof. That was a significant investment, around $5 million, but it made a world of difference. We worked with both Councilwoman Sanchez and Council President Clark's office, both in investing and strategizing. We worked really closely with the community up there to kind of meet their interest and to build their capacity to respond and be part of this, part of the renewal. So it really, the proof of concept, that way of doing business where you leverage your investment, you engage elected officials, you engage the community in the process, really can impact the quality of life. It can also drive investment. Dickinson Square was a work with then Councilman DiCicco, state of Pennsylvania, city capital dollars to invest in Dickinson Square to do a major remake. I think it was around $2.5 million. It might be off a little bit there, but it's made a world of difference in that neighborhood, both in the use of the park as well as the retail and residential investment in the neighborhood.
All right. We're talking about Philadelphia's Rebuild program and the $100 million grant from the William Penn Foundation to help get this going, what it means to neighborhoods outside Center City, Philadelphia. Janet Haas, chair of the board of the William Penn Foundation, is with us. Mike DeBaradinas, managing director for the City of Philadelphia, and Nicole Westerman, executive director of Rebuild. They're all with us for the hour. Stay with us. There's more just ahead. This is Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, and we are joined in studio this hour by Nicole Westerman, who is executive director of Philadelphia's Rebuild Initiative. Janet Haas is chair of the board of the William Penn Foundation, and Mike DeBaradinas is managing director for the City of Philadelphia. We're talking about this initiative, which seeks to renovate, to bring back to life many of Philadelphia's parks and playgrounds and recreation centers and libraries, and mostly in neighborhoods pushing outside of Center City. Again, the number is 888-477-9499 if you'd like to jump into the conversation. And Janet, off mic, we were talking about how this effort to move away from Center City with revitalization can kind of help perhaps bring in more funding for the effort.
Yeah, we're hoping that. And we think that we do have evidence. Let me rewind a little bit just to say that William Penn Foundation has been investing in public spaces since 1961. Mm. Almost every space across Center City we've been a part of, including the trails along the rivers and, of course, this larger network of trails called the Circuit. And our 50th anniversary in 1996, we invested particularly in Fairmount Park and also in the free library system and have continued investments since then. As we were working in Center City and then working in libraries in neighborhoods as well, we realized that these investments needed to be pushed out further. And only a couple of years ago, we began funding a program called Reimagining Civic Commons. And that takes five sites that are really on the seams of the city and neighborhoods to redevelop them. Some of them you'll recognize. One is in East Park, next in the Strawberry Mansion neighborhood. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a discovery center. It's amazing, on a 40-acre reservoir that looks like a lake in New England. There's Centennial Commons in West Park, which is out near the Please Touch Museum and the Gates High School, which is a very unused area in Parkside, and many of the neighbors consider it unsafe. It's going to be a remarkable teen and preteen playground. Amazing. It'll be just like Sister Cities for older kids, and so forth. Bartram's Garden, there's an area. Our viaduct, which will trump, so to speak, New York's, is in the north of the Chinatown area, and that's an area that's been neglected. So we realize now, and in doing that work, we were able to attract funding from national funders who were interested, because they acknowledged and appreciated the community engagement process and the fact that programming would be significantly driven by the communities after these facilities were built and renovated. Therefore, we thought that could happen here as well.
All right. So I'd like to get to community engagement a little bit more in just a moment, but back to funding for a minute, Mike DeBaradinas. So this $100 million from the William Penn Foundation is a huge step forward. How does the city plan to fund the rest?
So ours our intention to float three bonds over the course of 6 years, each for $100 million. So that would add $300 million.
Now, do voters have to have a say in this?
This was passed when city council and the mayor agreed on this year's budget back in June. The funds from the soda tax were put aside for this initiative. So we will pay for the bonds with proceeds from the soda tax. Yeah. So that then there's existing $50 million in the city's capital program. So there will be a significant tens of millions of dollars investment from the Philadelphia Water Department, this matches beautifully with their Green City Clean Water strategy.
So you're confident you're going to get that money?
Yeah, $500 million is, I think, a reasonable estimate.
Because I was wondering if you'd heard from various members of City Council, because, you know, there are competing needs. There's the pension system. There's the school district. What are you hearing from City Council?
Well, City Council is very excited about this. And their vote in June for the soda tax really made this possible, as well as universal pre-K and community schools. I contend that this is probably one of the most important budgets since 1992, Ed Rendell's budget in 1992, when we were facing fiscal disaster. The mayor and city council are investing in the future of the city. We are no longer managing decline. We are now managing growth, and we have to manage growth with equity. And these three programs do just that.
Nicole Westerman, this dovetails with Mayor Kenney's pre-K initiative. How so?
So we see these rec centers and libraries as, you know, they dovetail perfectly with education. So rec centers and libraries are the single largest provider of aftercare for students across Philadelphia. We know that students who attend aftercare do better in school, have better chances at good jobs later. They are, you know, engaged in athletic activities. They're getting healthy. So it's part of a continuum of child activities and child care. And rec centers also they provide outdoor space for a lot of pre-K centers as well.
And high-quality outdoor space is a part of quality pre-K. So we're trying to match those outdoor spaces with the Universal Pre-K Initiative.
And of course,
just to give you kind of the sense of how we knitting these initiatives together.
Yeah. And, of course, libraries play an essential role in pre-K education as centers where parents and other caregivers can take the children. Our free library system is now experimenting, trying several different models of development of spaces for the earliest, youngest children, actually, from zero up. So they're fundamentally important in early childhood learning.
So let's talk about community involvement a little bit more. How do you plan to get input into how these structures are renovated?
This is a rather exciting and a complicated idea, but we're good at talking to folks about what they'd like to see. We've done that for a decade or so in the public realm, talking to communities about public facilities in their neighborhoods, whether they're, you know, grant-funded or foundation-funded or capital-funded. We want to extend that. We want to understand what are the capacities people think they need in their neighborhood to be a strong neighborhood, and what are the capacities they think they need to be investors in the center.
Are you going to hold neighborhood meetings? Residents, churches?
Every project will have a community engagement process. We expect to work with the city council, Recreation Advisory Council, the Friends of the Free Library, the Friends of Neighborhood Parks across the city, as well as civic associations and CDCs to engage them in the process of both what's going to be the best investment we can make in your eyes, and then how do we maintain and steward and program these facilities into the future.
So, Nicole, how do you negotiate compromise? Because human nature, being as it is, you know, somebody might envision a park one way, someone might envision something else happening here. So how do you broker that?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. I also just wanted to add to what Mike was saying to say we are not going to be satisfied with just the usual suspects at community meetings and Rebuild. Another reason we're so excited is we think that this is a great opportunity for all kinds of Philadelphians to have their voices heard and to work together. I think, you know, post-election, it's all the more important for us to find ways to work together. So we're going to actually start with groundwork understanding who is in that community and making sure that the tactics that we're using to engage people, whether it's community meetings, whether it's apps, whether it's going door to door, that we're actually we're getting the voices of a representative cross-section of the community. And if we're not, we're going to change our tactics so that we do. But the compromise question, it does get messy. Mike can tell you stories about projects where there are a lot of diverse opinions about what kind of projects should get built, and it's difficult. But I think that is the work of the United States, right? That's the work of Philadelphia, that we want to invest. We want people to be engaged in those discussions. We want them to come and advocate for what are the programs that they need. So what does this facility need to have? And argue for it. And let's figure it out. What we can bring is some support for those conversations. We can help with facilitation. We can help with leadership training. And we can help make sure that all of the voices are at the table.
And then the end game is after the library is renovated or the playground is rebuilt, then there's the stewardship piece of it. Mm-hmm. And how does that work?
Well, part of it's based on the community engagement. And, of course, to Nicole's point, democracy was actually born right in the city. So we have hope, a positive hope. But this community engagement process leads to a sense of ownership for facilities and stewardship and a very big investment in what it is that we're going to be doing now so that that will grow. We have friends groups for many of the parks. We have recreation advisory boards for about half of the recreation centers now. These groups will strengthen and grow, and they will be largely responsible, actually, for a lot of the programming that reflects neighborhood interests and needs in terms of learning, cultural experiences, exercise, and so forth.
Mike DeBaradinas, do you have a design ideas in the works? Architects, design ideas, architects
on
board?
We have a commitment to, we don't have any, any architects on board at this moment, but we do have a commitment to high-quality design and to high-quality materials. The idea here is these investments, we do such a good job that these investments grow in value over time. They don't diminish in their value, but that we do such a good job with the neighborhood, such a good job with the design of these facilities that they have great staying power and utility over decades and decades and decades.
And if I can add to that, too,
sure.
Another exciting opportunity with Rebuild is that we can take some difficult design problems and tackle them. We have some economies of scale. So, for example, if you have been to a lot of playgrounds, you've seen swings that are taken down because there are big holes in the safety surface. And we haven't yet been successful to how do we make sure the safety surface under swings and slides lasts well. So we could invest a little chunk of money in, you know, let's get industrial designers and architects to work together to figure out a solution to that. There's got to be a solution, and then we could deploy it across the whole system.
And again, we're not talking about answers overnight. We're talking about a process of 6 years or so.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me reintroduce our guests. Janet Haas is chair of the board of the William Penn Foundation, Nicole Westerman, executive director of Rebuild, and Mike DeBaradinas is managing director for the City of Philadelphia. And we are talking about this ambitious Rebuild program this hour of Radio Times. And again, the number is 888-477-9499. As always, you are welcome to join the conversation if you'd like to do so. We have a comment now from Molly, who asks, what role will the visual arts play in this rebuilding? Interesting question.
Yeah. We're very interested not only in having art be a component of the revitalization and transformation of the facilities, but we are trying to figure out, can we use art in the engagement process as well? So can we use the visual arts as a way to gather up ideas, the way to inspire people to think in a new way about the physicality of the facility, and then hopefully have an art component in the transformation as well? So it's a great question. We're on it. I don't think we're to the point where we know how we're going to do it, but it's something of great interest to us right now.
And at William Penn Foundation, in our funding of public spaces and cultural institutions, more recently we've developed a category called New Arts, New Places. And it's about bringing art to communities and to people where they are, rather than expecting that everybody will go to a particular theater or concert hall. We've done some of that already along the Schuylkill River. There were dance programs on the river, actually, along the trail. And I know that at Bartram's Gardens, there's going to be a remarkable float lab, which will have a lot of visual art and engagement. So we expect this to continue and to be taken out to the libraries and to the rec centers as well.
And Janet Haas, why the focus on art?
That's an age-old focus, actually, of William Penn Foundation. We were started 70 years ago, committed to this city, and I think through several generations of family and staff, there's been a strong commitment to that because of the potential that it provides for people. People can dream bigger, think bigger, connect to one another in different ways, see things in lights that they haven't, and grow in a spiritual way as well.
If I can add that to that, too, Mike kind of referenced this, but art can be an effective way of working with communities that that haven't felt like they've had a seat at the table, like the government hasn't been there for them. So in neighborhoods that are distressed, where there are issues, art can be the vehicle for healing for them, for having their voices heard, for telling their stories. And then for moving forward into improved a new time for their neighborhood facilities.
We've got a call from Harry in Northeast Philadelphia. Welcome to Radio Times, Harry.
Yes, I'm from the Greater Northeast, and our area has always felt that we're somewhat neglected by city government. At one time, they were even talking about seceding from the city. Mm. There's a lot of condo developments, and pay a good amount of taxes, and we pay for our various, like, we don't get trash and things like that.
Sure. Hey, Harry, we're up against a break, so I just needed to narrow focus a smidge.
What I'm trying to say is our area, because the crime wave is starting to move further up, and we had a child killed in an area that's traditionally a good area.
All right. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Harry, we appreciate it. Mike, you want to tackle that?
Yeah, we have a thanks to William Penn early on, maybe over a year ago, we did an exhaustive study of the existing conditions of facilities and the investments, historic investments, usage, general conditions. So that's the first time ever that we had this data. That data, working with the district council person and the rebuild effort, will line up and decide on the investments in those neighborhoods. So we will invest in the Northeast. It will in some large part be driven by the data, but we will make significant investments across the city, and the Northeast will be part of that.
And Harry is one of those people you probably like to see at these community meetings.
Definitely. And we're not turning our back on facilities that need work, even if they're not in the most distressed neighborhood.
We have an email from Arthur who says, I'm concerned about the long-term maintenance of public outdoor spaces to include playground structures, waste disposal, and lighting. So renovation and more. Nicole?
So that's a great question, and it's also a major focus of ours. I mean, the reason that we're in this situation is that the city of Philadelphia has so many competing budgetary pressures that it just can't make the annual capital investments it needs to. So these renovations will be focused on being energy efficient, on standardizing equipment so that we can maintain them more effectively. But we also have kind of a dream of establishing a maintenance endowment through rebuild so that we can sort of add to the base layer of annual investment that we're making in these facilities every year.
I just want to add that the over the last 5 years, the maintenance division of the Park and Rec Department has grown radically. And it has been invested in by both Mayor Kenney, Mayor Nutter, and City Council. So we are building over time our capacity to take care of these new facilities.
All right, we're going to talk about employment after the break regarding rebuild. Joining us in studio, Mike DeBaradinas, Managing Director for the City of Philadelphia, Janet Haas, Chair of the Board of the William Penn Foundation, Nicole Westerman, who's Executive Director of the Rebuild Initiative. And we'd like you to join us too, 888-477-9499. Keep it here. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, and our focus this hour of the program is on Philadelphia's Rebuild program. Janet Haas, Chair of the Board of the William Penn Foundation, which has awarded a $100 million grant to this program. Nicole Westerman is Executive Director of Rebuild, and Mike DeBaradinas, Managing Director for the City of Philadelphia. And lines are open at 888-477-9499, or you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And a big piece of this initiative has to do with employment. I'll open here with a quote from Brian Abernathy, who's Philly's first deputy managing director, saying this program will rebuild an economic base that has been lacking in this city for decades. So what sorts of jobs are we talking about? Approximately how many do we know, Nicole?
So we're very excited that we're talking with the building trades. The building trades are in a place where they have a lot of retirements and they have a ton of construction activity. So they're looking for their next wave of workforce. And what we know about workforces around on construction sites around Philadelphia is they don't look like most Philadelphians. So we see Rebuild as an amazing opportunity to help get more Philadelphians and more unemployed and underemployed Philadelphians into the building trades. Where the city is negotiating an MOU with the trades right now, and a major feature of that MOU would be an apprentice-ready program.
So MOU?
A memorandum of understanding that would cover rebuild sites over $3 million. And the apprentice-ready program would allow us to find folks in low-income zip codes, get them some technical training provided by the building trades, have them, the building trades would help them get ready for apprentice tests. Then we could also provide them with soft skills training so that they're able to successfully start a job and get to a job every day, get some case management so that they have some ongoing support, some wraparound support. And then really importantly, because Rebuild is a 6 or 7 year program, and we're going to have construction sites. So when folks finish an apprentice-ready program, they will be able to walk into a job. They won't have to wait to get hired by a contractor, we'll be able to put them to work. So what we're trying to do is learn from efforts in the past and where they've fallen short and where have people not gotten all the way to a family-sustaining job in the building trades, and we're trying to fill those gaps. And the other really important piece of Rebuild is small business support. So again, because we're a 6 or 7 year program, it's an opportunity for small contractors to, instead of spending a lot of time and energy trying to get their next job, they can focus on getting better at doing their business and building up their own capital so that they don't have to pay high interest rates for cash flow loans, for example. Mm-hmm. So we've been working hard to learn what are the barriers for small construction companies, how can we help them grow? And so we plan to have some supports in place like cash flow, like bonding support, and like skills development to help them develop.
And again, we, traditionally the process has been a low bid process in the city of Philadelphia, and Rebuild would kind of work around this. Mike?
If I can just jump in there. Yeah, it's really, really important to us. We're just talking to some small contractors yesterday who were talking about bidding on jobs, and the construction manager said to them, cut your price or we'll give the work to somebody else. And to cut their price, they would have had to be not profitable. And we feel like that is a race to the bottom. So we will have the flexibility with Rebuild to not only consider price, obviously we want to get the best value, but we think that it's worth something to be able to put graduates from the Apprentice Ready program onto a job site. We know that they're not going to be as productive as a journeyman, and that's okay. They need some time to develop. That's worth paying a premium for.
Yeah. So a bit of a shock to the system, turning things upside down a little bit, tossing the low bid system out the window, Mike?
I think it's part of the ambition of the program. We're owning it. It's seated in the managing director's office. We understand the mayor's policy objectives, city council's policy objectives are, we think, the right ones, and we are confident that over this 6 year period we can reach some really important employment goals, and also the building the capacity of women and minority contractors to compete out into the future for work. So we added this is part of the expectation. We are comfortable with it. It's complicated. It will not be easy.
What have you heard from the unions?
Well, we're working really closely with them to develop this memorandum of understanding with them. We're confident that we will come up with something that works and will, in fact, begin to bring in new. Like Nicole said, that look like Philadelphia, look like the population of this city, that we'll be able to do, we'll bring in women and minority employees as well as build the capacity of women and minority contractors as well.
And model a new way of doing business for the city and for other entities around the city, for corporations and for our institutions that are doing a lot of construction.
Poverty has been such a it's such a tough issue for how many decades, in this city. Do you think, Janet Haas, that this is going to make
I think it can make a real impact. Too many people have been left behind for too long in this city, and a city can't prosper when that's the case. We are we have the highest poverty rate of the 10 largest cities in America, 26%. For our children, it's even worse. Our children's poverty rate is 37%. Half of those are in deep poverty. They live with family incomes of less than $10,000. There's more than 60,000 children. They would more than fill the Link and the Wells Fargo stadiums, and there'd be more waiting outside. That's how many children live in the city in deep poverty. We know poverty creates barriers. It leads to social and community isolation. It creates incredible stress on people's health and their minds. This is an opportunity to lift aspirations and also to lift our hopes and expectations for everybody in this city.
All right, back to the phones we go. Tim is in Camden, New Jersey. Hi, Tim.
Hi. Mike and I were on Radio Times over 20 years ago talking about urban policy or the lack thereof.
Okay, what's your last name, Tim?
Merle.
Okay.
So I'm sitting over here. I'm jealous because Mike is reaping the fruits of a lot of conversations and a lot of processes. And I'm over here in Camden, and this is the exact thing that we've been really crying for decades now. And I'm just wondering, from Janet Hobbs' perspective, it seems to me that Camden would be a proving ground for these kind of projects, but we don't seem to get this kind of funding and this kind of approach. I know they have a project now in Camden, but it's nothing like this. The leadership development, the business development, the community engagement pieces, we never seem to get that if we're right across the river. Mm-hmm. And so I was just wondering, from her perspective, why that might be, or if there are plans in the future to include your little sister city across the river in this kind of approach.
All right, Tim. Well, we're going to give Janet a moment to take a crack at it. What does it take to be considered for this sort of funding, for this sort of an effort, Janet?
Well, this funding has been built on our deep engagement in the city for many, many decades, actually, and the experience and expertise we've gained working with partners to develop similar places and working with groups in the communities as well. We do actually think that this is going to be a national model. There's little doubt in my mind. Our reimagining the Civic Commons, I mentioned a few of those projects when some of this work is getting into the communities in Strawberry Mansion and in at Parkside and in Southwest Philadelphia, has become a national model. It's being copied now by Chicago, Detroit, Akron, and Memphis. This is likely to be as well. This is an unprecedented effort. It's citywide scale. It's at the system level. We've not seen that done anywhere in this country. It's locally funded as well, which we know in this era of federal disinvestment is very important. One of the reasons we made such a big grant is that we wanted to increase the visibility, both locally and nationally, to catalyze other funding for this work and to catalyze investment in other cities.
Yeah. Well, there's only so much, you know, that any one foundation can do. So if people are interested in applying for grants, what is the first step and where do you begin to look? I mean, what would you advise other groups that might be looking for mm-hmm. funding from any number of sources, Janet? How do you start?
Right. You see, in a sense, you start where you live. For example, here in Philadelphia, we have a Foundation Resource Center in the Free Library, and I know that that's is present in other cities as well. Often, when pilot projects can be funded, even small ones, that can produce a proof of concept, and that can attract other local funders. We're doing this. We're working the same way over here, Tim. We're trying to attract many more local funders as well to this initiative, because as you know from your own experience, and as you heard today, there's far more need even than this big project can address. We know that we need to kind of raise the consciousness of the American population that cities matter. More and more people, it's said that 80 or 90% of the world will live in cities in just a couple of more decades. Cities matter, and people want to live in cities. They want to be with other people, and we know that investment is important.
All right, continuing with our calls to Phoenixville now, and Rebecca. Hello, Rebecca. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a woman in the construction industry, and I am very interested in what your plans are in promoting women getting into the trades and in construction management as a part of your project and how we can get involved.
Nicole?
So happy to hear you. We are looking for folks like you. One thing that we know is that there are a lot of women and there are a lot of minorities who aren't really aware of the construction industry opportunities. They don't know what the different trades do. They may not have neighbors and family members who are in the union to tell them about how the test prep works. So that we think that needs to be a piece of a long-term plan to get more women and minorities into the union. So we want to get into the middle schools, help. We're looking for women and successful minorities who are already in the building trades to tell their stories to us so we can put them on the website, so we can get you into middle schools and teach kids that these great career opportunities are out there. We want to get out and recruiting in lots more places, barbershops, schools, the corner cafe. We want to find folks to bring them in.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times, Rebecca. Tweet from Dr. Kelly: what commitment will you make regarding hiring community members in the rebuilding effort? Nicole?
So that really speaks to our Apprentice Ready program. It is a fundamental commitment of Rebuild. We are looking for low-income and unemployed, underemployed Philadelphians to join in this work and to share in the economic growth. So we're going to be out with council members actively recruiting people for the Apprentice Ready program. We're going to get out in the neighborhoods. We'll make sure that you have the information you need on the website. So we're going to try to get the word out there as much as we can, pull people into this Apprentice Ready program. We understand that there are kind of different levels of experience out there we need to be responsive to. We want to bring high school students in. We want to bring high school dropouts in. We want to bring returning citizens in. We know there are people out there with great skills who are just underemployed. So we want to try to find ways in for all kinds of folks.
All right. And an email from Luke. How will Rebuild address the issue that as infrastructure is improved, there is an increased risk for private development to occur in a way that causes those most economically at risk to be displaced from their neighborhoods? Yeah. Mike,
well,
this one's for you.
You can not invest in a neighborhood because it's poor and maybe will be gentrified. I mean, that you just can't respond to that. Because you have to, this program is dedicated in large part to investing in communities that have not had high quality public facilities at their disposal for decades. So we have to be thoughtful in how we invest. We have to include, we have to build capacity in neighborhoods. We have to build the economies in the neighborhoods we're working in. But we can't shy away from that investment because it's a poor neighborhood, and maybe it'll be gentrified. We just can't.
We have to cross that bridge when you come.
Yeah, right. But if you take that approach, you don't invest.
I want to say that you can't always predict the impact of what you do. For example, we at William Penn Foundation have been funding the trail development along the Schuylkill Riverbanks for 25 years. For a long time, nothing happened. The railroad was there. They were intransigent. No development could happen and so forth. Now there's a trail that stretches from way beyond Valley Forge, way up north, way out west, and pretty soon it'll go all the way to Bartram's Gardens. Most of those parts are already under construction. Only one small segment is not yet funded. More than 1 million people use that trail a year, more than 25,000 a week. Now we mentioned that there are arts on the trail as well. It's remarkable. We can't always say what impact and when that will happen and what it will be.
Take the first step.
The same with our pre-K funding. We were on pre-K 25 years ago. Who would know that in this era now the governor has committed to funds for pre-K, education of children who will be at special risk when they get to school. The city now, our mayor, is universal pre-K. That's his rallying call. We don't always know. Who knew that Spruce Harbor Park would be getting 600,000 people a year now?
I just wanted to add, too, that it's our commitment with Rebuild to engaging with the long-term residents. So, you know, even if it's newer residents who have louder voices and who tend to show up at a traditional community meeting, we're not going to be satisfied with that. We're going to be knocking on the door of the old lady down the block and making sure that her voice is heard.
Sounds like you need a huge force of people to make this.
We do. And actually, when you talk about employment, too, we're really excited about the prospect of trying to engage some young people in neighborhoods. Maybe it's their first part-time job where they're learning some skills, canvassing, maybe some data collection, and that could be another piece.
So we have about 5 seconds. When do you hope to see the first hammers and paintbrushes go to work, Nicole?
We'd love to break ground on a small group of modest projects this spring.
All right, Nicole Westerman, great to have you with us, Executive Director of Rebuild. Janet Haas, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. Janet Haas is Chair of the Board of the William Penn Foundation, and Mike DeBaradinas, our thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
Mike, Managing Director for the City of Philadelphia. And as always, we invite you to check out our Facebook page and our podcasts. You'll find them at whyy.org/radiotimes. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Thanks for joining us for Radio Times.